should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties, and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm, and wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety, may all beings be happy, whatever living beings they may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great order mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be happy. Let none deceive another, or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another, even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child. So with a boundless heart would one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, free from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness. One should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding, by not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being free from all sense desires, is not born again into this world.
Okay, so it's just one person who is new. Oops, yeah, keeps moving here. But anyway, what we usually do, we give a bit of a introduction in the beginning, mainly about meditation, so we know what's following, and then the meditation will be for about half an hour. It's a guided meditation, so you will hear my voice a little bit when you get lost, or you're like, well, what am I supposed to do? But if you know what you're doing, you can just ignore my voice and think it's like the rain outside and just go inside and enjoy yourself. And then afterwards, there's usually a bit of a talk, or there is also the opportunity to have question and answers. Is there still a question box? We still have that. Okay, so if there are any questions, then the monk will try to answer it as well as possible. Great. So I was going to first talk a little bit about letting go, because that's one of the things that we talk about a lot and that people have a lot of confusion about. And then we do the meditation, and after the meditation I thought we could talk a little bit about gratitude, because that's something that fits in quite well with the holiday season, I feel. Right, so to put it into context a little bit, this letting go business. When I started to get interested in Buddhism, I just followed those teachings, or I learned a bit of meditation. But then one day at the teacher training college, my religious education teacher realized that I'm interested in Buddhism, so he asked me to teach one of the other classes about Buddhism. So Even back then, I went online to research a little bit what this Buddhism thing is about. And if you do that, usually what comes up is like the Four Noble Truths and the Eightfold Path. So I just wanted to mention the Four Noble Truths, but in a simple way without using too difficult kind of terms, and how letting go kind of fits into that. What I found on the homepage back then there was something that I think the Dalai Lama said, or maybe it was even the Buddha back then, because the Buddha was described in the scriptures as a physician. So you can use the simile of a physician to understand the Four Noble Truths. So when there is something not going quite right, or Ajahn Brahm actually says it's right when you're sick, but if you feel there is something, you know, not going okay in your body or in your mind, you usually would go and see a doctor if you need help. And the doctor will see and see the symptoms and make an analysis of those symptoms. And that's basically the first noble truth, to understand what is dissatisfactory or where there is a problem or why there is disease, in the medical sense, but also in the sense of the word otherwise. And then the doctor will try to find out what the cause of that disease is. Hopefully the doctor will not just take out a medication and give it to you and say bye-bye, because then we're just dealing or trying to suppress the symptoms and not understanding what actually is underneath and what causes those symptoms. And in Buddhism, that is described as a thirst or as a longing or as a wanting, but it's a wanting of something which can't be achieved, and that gives us a lot of suffering. The third thing that a doctor would do is, when they found out what the disease, what the problem is, what the symptoms are, what the disease is, he will find out what kind of cure there is, what kind of medicine there is. And that's the third noble truth of letting go of that suffering. And that is not the last step though, because if the doctor just tells you, you know, these things need to be done, and we don't do the fourth step, which is really important, to actually take that medicine or to go through that treatment, then we are not going to get rid of that disease. And the letting go business kind of comes up in the third and in the fourth noble truth. So I wanted to talk about that a little bit, and hopefully in a practical way, that, so that it's not just a concept. And Ajahn Brahm gave he gave a talk on the teachings of the Buddha, based on the teachings of the Buddha, but he called it the four ways of letting go, and that's basically what is stated in the first, in the third noble truth, and it's one of the most popular talks on YouTube. So if you go and Google Ajahn Brahm and you look for the talk that is at the top, that's the talk that is at the top. So a lot of the people want to know about these things, and there is four things that we consider. And the Pali words here, I'll just mention them if some people listen to this later, are chaga, patinisaga, muti, and analaya, or analayo. What does that mean in English? So chaga basically means giving, and that is very appropriate for the Christmas season. But it's not just an ordinary giving. It is a giving where you give yourself fully, where you give without having any expectations back in return. It could also be described as a devotion. So when we are really devoted to a person or to our job or to something else, we really give ourselves to whatever that is. And we basically have a dedication and we surrender. In German, there is a very nice word, because I have a German background, and it's called Hingabe. Gabe is like a gift or something you give, and Hin means towards. So you're really giving yourself towards something which is valuable. And that's one thing I was reflecting on during the Rains retreat this year. We have 3 months where we meditate a lot and go into silence a lot and study a lot as well, for the people who like that. We have time for that. And what kind of came up for me was this notion of falling. And I know that falling can be something which we think is really scary, because when we fall, we often hit something in the afterwards. But the falling itself is actually very, very pleasant. I mean, I've never jumped out of a plane, but if people have, and from what I was told, it's a very pleasant experience to be falling. Crashing down, that's what the problem is. And if you look at the language, the English language as well, there is some other things that have falling that comes in front of it that are actually pleasant. Falling asleep. So you don't, well, you crash out actually, that's true, when you're sleeping, you say that in English. But it's not that something bad happens. You're allowing yourself to fall into that state. And that's what we are doing in meditation as well, or in the whole Buddhist path. Another thing is falling in love. It's something that is very, very pleasant as well. And for me, sometimes I just imagine falling and falling without hitting anything afterwards. Or it's more kind of like allowing to fall into something which carries you. So it's like when you're on water, you are floating on that water, when you really relax, when you really let yourself be carried by that substance. And that is something what we are trying to achieve, or trying to just let happen in meditation. So we are trying to rest in reality. That's another kind of phrase that really rings true for me. So that's the first way of letting go. The second way of letting go is an abandoning. It's a throwing away. It's a discarding. It's a giving up. Quite strong words. But if we are throwing things away that we don't really need, it's something very, very pleasant. And the word we often use in Buddhism is renunciation. And the example for me that comes up, especially also now with Anagarika Simon here, who will be ordaining soon, we have ordinations happening at our monastery, I don't know, maybe about 4 times a year for novices, and then also they become bhikkhus. So yeah, it's maybe 6 or 7 times a year. And for me, it's always something really, really inspiring, because those people are giving up something. They're renouncing certain things. And it's not an easy thing to give up certain things. And it's actually a sacrifice. But the word sacrifice means that what we are doing is something sacred. So we are not just giving it up because we don't like it or because we want to get rid of it. We are giving it up out of an understanding that we can develop, that we can work on something which is much richer, which is much, much deeper. So the sacrifice that we do in Buddhism is giving up a lesser happiness for a greater happiness. And we are stepping on that path step by step. Because the sacrifices, when I hear that word, it really reminds me of the animal sacrifices that were happening in the time of the Buddha, where, or even, you know, in other cultures, where the people believed when they kill an animal that they're doing something good and that they're kind of appeasing the gods or whatever. But that is not a real sacrifice, because you are not giving up something precious for something even more precious. And if you imagine gods or angels or whatever those beings would be that you're offering these things to, I just can't imagine that they want to see blood, or that they want to have like death happening. They want to have something beautiful happening, and they want to support that instead. The third way of letting go is freeing, is unburdening, is walking away from something, is unfettering yourself. So when you are renouncing, and when you are starting to understand why you are renouncing certain things, and you feel internally what it does to you, then you are realizing that these are burdens that we are putting down. And whenever that happens, it's always a very, very pleasant feeling. When you are free and you were imprisoned before, it's a very, very kind of euphoric, a very nice feeling. And the kind of example that I wrote down for myself here is Ajahn Chah had one story where he said it's like two demons that have a rope and they're pulling on that rope which is around our necks and they're strangling us. And when we are starting to learn to let go, then those demons get a rest and that rope starts to loosen and we can breathe for the first time. And that can happen in meditation, that can happen in your life, but it only happens when you actually put certain things down and you start to realize that they were actually burdening you. Because when we're very, very busy and we are ignoring a lot of the stuff that is happening, then we don't really feel how much weight that puts on our shoulders. But when we put it down for long enough and when we are aware enough, we realize that something has lifted and that was there for such a long time. And then we're more inclined to do that letting go again in the future. And then the last one is not being affected or moved or pushed or pulled or carried away, excited or kind of pushed into fear in all those kind of emotions that happen in our day-to-day life. So we are starting to gain a certain balance, a certain calmness, a certain stability. And the pictures that are used in the scriptures, it's like a lotus. The lotus, whatever you pour over it, it doesn't matter, it doesn't really stick. So Ajahn Brahm often calls this the Teflon mind. So it's like a Teflon pan. The things that happen, they still, we see them, we understand them, but they flow through us. We don't hold on to them. The other example from Ajahn Chah was also, he used to pick up a stick, and then he was asking one of the monks and was saying, "How heavy is this stick?" But before the monks were able to actually get the stick in their hand, he would throw it away. So how can you know how heavy something is when it just kind of passes by you without you having to carry it? Also some other pictures that come up in the scriptures that I quite like is, it's like when you're painting something, but you're painting it in the air. So it doesn't stick, it doesn't have a resting place. Or when you're writing something into water, you might see it for a little time, you're touching the water understands what's happening there, but it doesn't keep that impact that has come. And that's something that happens in meditation. It's also that we learn that all these things that come up and come at us in life, when we are in meditation, we try not to amplify these things. So it's like with sound, when the sound comes and there is something which absorbs the sound, instead of having walls where it echoes back and forth. So in meditation we try to develop a mind that is like that. Okay, so that is the four ways of letting go. I hope that gives you a few examples or a little bit of reflection before we do the meditation together. For the meditation we usually also dim the lights and close the eyes. All right? If you wish. I mean, you can have your eyes open. It's not compulsory or whatever. But it just helps you to focus the mind inwards. In meditation, we try to bring the mind back instead of having it go out into the world. But it will go out into the world again and again. That's normal in meditation. And that's why the letting go muscle is so important that we develop that. Alright, so I encourage you to wiggle a little bit and maybe stretch yourself so that you can get in a comfortable position, because we will be sitting for a while. And if you are kind with your body at the beginning of the meditation, that means that it won't disturb you during the meditation that much. Okay, and then once we have wiggled our body and brought it in a position that is reasonably comfortable, then we can gently close the eyes. and just try to see if we can let all those things go that have happened before, and all the plans that we might have for the future, that we can find our way into this precious present moment. And please try during this meditation to see if you can really give yourself to this process of meditation. Trust this process of meditation so much that you can let yourself fall into it, instead of being drawn out into the world, carried away. We fall backwards into whatever is already here. And what can help to settle you in the beginning is if we take a few deep breaths in the beginning, and if you wish, you can, when you're breathing in, you can really expand your belly and expand your chest. Open yourself up. And when you're breathing out, you're just following gravity and relaxing into your seat, letting your shoulders drop. So we have this kind of counter movement. When we breathe in, we fill ourselves with energy and openness. And we sit up tall, and when we breathe out, we relax and drop the shoulders backwards and down. And after you've done that for a few breaths, you can kind of find a balance. So you're open and upright, but you're also deeply relaxed and at ease. So here at the Armidale group, we usually sit in chairs, so if you are sitting on the ground at home listening to this, or even here in this room, just imagine that your body is kind of sitting, so you can follow the body scan that way. Or even if you're lying down at home. And imagine that there is water flowing onto your head, and there is an opening in your head, and it's nice and warm and relaxing water. And as it starts to flow into your body, it starts to fill up your body like a vessel, from the bottom to the top.
So this warm water makes its way to your toes and to the soles of your feet. And just bring your mind to that area of your body. And then feel how it is filling up your feet. So that they get warm and relaxed. As it is a constant stream of kindness and warmth that is filling up this vessel, the level of the water is slowly, slowly rising up. So that you can feel it in your calves and your shins. And as it makes its way up to your knees, let it soothe and smooth your lower legs. And when it has reached your knees, starts to overflow, so to speak, and goes into your upper legs. It fills the space where your bum touches the chair. And as the water level slowly rises, when it touches your body, it relaxes it. What might happen is that your mind gets pulled away out into the world again. That's very natural, it's very normal. So that's when we let go. That's when we let go of something which doesn't serve us right now, because we are developing peace, calm, relaxation. So the water level is raising and raising in our bellies now. And it goes higher and higher to our chest, slowly making its way up to the shoulders. From the inside out, it's not just touching our belly, of course, it's also touching our back, our lower back, the middle part, and now also the upper part of the back. And as it relaxes, please feel the freedom that you're gaining through letting go. The freedom from tension, from worry and stress. And as it reaches almost your shoulders, it starts to overflow into your arms. And it goes all the way down and starts filling where your fingers are. The palms of your hand. And soon it reaches up to the wrists. And then it slowly makes its way up to the elbows. If it's hard to stay with it for you, just imagine the level of water. Try to see how it's raising and feel it on your skin and in your bones, wherever it is in your body, and move together with it. Slowly moving up the lower arms, to the elbows and then beyond, up towards your shoulder blades. See if you can feel your whole lower body and your torso full with this gentle, warm, kind water. That carries you. That you can deeply relax into. And let yourself go, even if it's just for a short period of time. Then we move up the spine, through the neck, until it starts filling our head. So that we can feel how it relaxes our jaw that is often tense. All the muscles in our face. All the muscles in our eyes. We are not trying to look at anything outside. We are trying to look inside, feel inside. So we can give the muscles of the eyes a rest. And we can also give our poor old brain a rest. And let it do what it needs to do to keep us alive. But not all this thinking and planning and worrying. And then once the vessel of the body is completely filled up, the water doesn't stop and it starts to overflow and flow down our whole body, so we can feel it on our skin. So we are relaxed from the inside out. And now we are enveloped by this water, so that we are also relaxed from the outside in. Let it wash all the way down from the top of the head down to the toes, into the fingertips. So if we've been kind with our bodies, then they will have relaxed by now. so that we can hardly feel them. So that we can let them go just when we are just like when we are falling asleep. The attention to the body is gone. Very often we become aware of the mental world. And I wish you to imagine if thoughts or emotions come up, that they're like vessels, like the body was a vessel before, and that you fill them up with kindness, with care, with warmth, and see if they can relax just like the body relaxed. Whatever comes up, fill it up with kindness and care until it overflows, so the kindness is there from the inside out, from the outside in, and it completely relaxes that thought or that emotion, that wish, or whatever it may be, that fear. And as it relaxes, it's like water that is flowing past you, that you don't have to hold on to longer anymore. Whatever it might be, passion, grief, anger, let it be filled with kindness, enveloped with kindness, and relaxed to the max, as Ajahn Brahm says. peace and joy arises, welcome it, embrace it. If it doesn't, no worries, just be kind with whatever arises. Let it settle and relax. And if things become calm and peaceful, the only thing you might be aware of now is your breathing going in and going out, like the waves on the shore. See if you can let yourself fall into your breath. Completely give yourself to your breath, surrender, and let yourself be carried, supported, loved by this source of life. Things are not going according to plan, no problem, we can always re-relax without getting angry or upset. That's just what happens, it's a practice. We can always let go again. And as we are approaching the end of this lovely meditation together, let us reflect on what has happened. what we did do or what we didn't do. But especially what it led to. If it led to relaxation, peace, ease, comfort, how did that happen? Where did it come from? What have we let go of? And remember that this is something which is at our disposal all the time, if we just take the time, go to a quiet spot and be kind to ourselves. Be ringing the gong 3 times for you to slowly make your way out of meditation back into the world out here. Feel free to wiggle your toes, stretch, and see the bright light. I hope you were able to go on a journey inward. If you were sleepy, that's something which is very natural as well, because we do stress out our body quite a lot, and our mind as well, so when it gets a chance it grabs it, but that's fine. Once it starts to wake up, once it starts to really enjoy what is happening, to get interested in the process, then the letting go will be balanced with energy, and then we get an equilibrium that kind of keeps us afloat. Because with falling asleep, you're gone.
Maybe gone.
With meditation, you let go of certain things, but you grow other things and encourage those things until they become so strong that they effortlessly carry you, like the water carries a log, or how the water carries a person, even if the person is really relaxed, especially salt water. Okay. Very good. Shall I do a bit of talking, or do people want to ask something at this stage? Or ask later? Ask later? Okay, good. So I'm going to hit you with Christmas, with the world out there. We were just driving here and we saw this big sign up, like evening shopping or whatever it was. And I was telling Simon we might have a few less customers because of it. So the Christmas season is a time of giving. But how can we make sure that it is not giving us a headache and giving us stress? Because I remember as a primary school teacher, it's many years ago now, but I used to be a primary school teacher for a little while. Christmas is one of the most kind of stressful period of time for the kids, and therefore also for the parents and for everyone. And I've realized that it's also just the culture and advertisement and the whole thing of buying things and giving things that can kind of bring that about. Even as a young person back then, I tried to get away from Christmas, actually, because I felt Christmas is about peace and quiet and joy and happiness, and everyone's just rushing around. So I would often go to the monastery over Christmas and New Year's. So giving gifts to everybody and, you know, writing cards, I guess that's not that much happening anymore. I don't know if it's e-cards these days. Oh, still happening? Or still happening? Okay, good. And then the responsibility you feel, I have to kind of respond to the people that have written to me, and all that kind of stress that can be built up with that notion. And I thought it might be useful if I can give you some hints or some ideas for some alternatives to this kind of Christmas craziness, if I might call it that. At the monastery, we don't feel it that much. I mean, we get Christmas pudding and Christmas ham or whatever, and we get a bit more support during that time as well, because people are generous and they come and give. But otherwise, we don't really feel it that much. But even as a layperson, I was trying to kind of find ways to not kill the spirit of Christmas, but not to kill myself in the process either. So one of the alternatives was to, with your circle of friends or with your family, to find a way of gift giving that doesn't overburden you, but it still kind of expresses your love and your appreciation you have for the people that are around you. And one way is to delegate. So you have one person giving one gift to one person of the family, instead of having everyone giving gifts to everyone. So you can actually put a bit more thought into what you're giving to that person, and a bit more time maybe as well. And I think the joy is about the same, you know. Sometimes I remember as a kid getting so many presents that I kind of felt it's too much. I don't know if that's the same for you. So you could just write down the names of all the people in your family, put it in a pot, and then everyone just pulls one, and that's the person they'll give a gift to. And you can maybe do something similar with your friends, or even at your workplace or at school. And one of the things that we did back at the boarding school that I found a really nice thing to do, where you're kind of depersonalizing the whole process. Because when it's very personal, you're kind of thinking, oh, am I giving the right present to that person? And if I'm not, is that person going to be angry with me or whatever? Or they didn't give me something last year, or did I do anything wrong or whatever it is? So we have this game that is called the Guardian Angel game in Europe, I guess, or in Switzerland. I don't know if any of you know it here. You will be able to tell me afterwards. In Swiss German, it's a very bit of fun and games, it's called the Schutzengel-Spiel. So that's the Guardian Angel game. And it functions quite similarly to what I've just described, but you do it in a workplace. So everyone who wants to participate writes their name on a piece of paper, puts it in a pot, and then you just draw one, and you have a name of someone in your company or in your school or whatever. But the kind of nice thing with that game is you don't know who is giving the gifts. So you kind of do it secretly. And because I was at a primary school kind of training college, people were quite creative with that. So we had like a common room, and we had a big line, like the kind of lights you have here, but it was like a washing line. So people could put the little presents there with the name of their person they were the guardian angel for, or they would kind of, you know, get a friend and pass on the present. So it wasn't just getting a present, but it was also kind of the interesting part of, oh, who is it from? And it's kind of a little bit of a detective kind of game thingy. And I was also trying to make it interesting for people to join that whole game and to understand what it is all about. So the boarding school, if I remember correctly, had about 250 people that went to it. And we had quite a few of them who were boarding. And because I knew the boarding school leader quite well, and because they trusted me, they actually gave me the master key. So on the weekend, when everyone was gone, I went into everyone's room and left a little present and left a little kind of wisdom note that kind of went with that present to kind of get them going, to understand how nice it is to get a little gift. And then we had a few posters everywhere at the school as well, and no one really knew what was happening. And then the following day, on Monday, we usually had like a plenum session every, I think, 2 weeks or every month. So I recruited one of the kids that I was teaching during my training, and she came all dressed up as an angel, and I gave her a little kind of chocolate hearts, and she would just go from classroom to classroom and knock on the door and go inside and just give those hearts to random people. So I kind of tickled the interest of those people. And what really kind of heartened me is that it wasn't just the students who joined the game. It was even like the people who were cleaning the place and the people who were teaching. And one of the biggest things for me was that everything goes in one pot. All it was about 120 people, I think. And then the next weekend I was drawing out all the names and writing them down so I knew who is who, but not showing them with us. So they just got that one person, but if something went wrong, so that I'd have a record of it. And it was really, really nice to kind of see the whole month, well, or maybe the 24 days before you go on holidays, unfolding. So one person, for example, I remember, took the overhead projector and they wrote a little message, and they had an extension cord and they put it outside and projected it on the wall of one of the buildings, and it had kind of like a message, dear whoever it was, I wish you a good night or something like that. So the whole energy about it was just so nice. And if there is something like that you can do, I would encourage you to do that, and to give to someone you don't even know, to give to a stranger, to do charity work. I know there is this gift card thing happening here at the Armadale group, and I think that is really the spirit of Christmas, and the joy that those people are getting, even though we might not see it. We know it's something that is really, 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 really precious. And I picked someone, I was I think in second grade, and I picked someone from fifth grade, didn't even know the person, but she wasn't boarding, but she was in a flat somewhere, so I went to the flatmates when she wasn't there and tried to find out what she kind of wished for to get on Christmas. So, I really enjoyed the whole kind of process of that. So if you can make it a bit of fun. And with this idea that we often have in the world of paying back, of reciprocity, and I've heard people talk more and more about this concept of paying things forward. So you are giving something to someone you don't know just because you are grateful for what you have, because that starts to overflow and you want to share it with other people. And that kind of tags into this idea of appreciation that I wanted to talk about. I would also like to use this simile that we had in the meditation. So we had this water that is kind of filling up this vessel. And for me, gratitude doesn't stand alone. Gratitude is a word that has kind of like friends, and it has a friend on the left side and a friend on the right side. So the friend that comes before gratitude is appreciation. It's being appreciative of another person, of ourselves, of a quality, of an announcement that people are coming and visiting people in hospital. So we have to be aware of something, first of all, that gratitude can kind of grow. And then if that happens, it's like a fountain. You have the first little vessel that starts to fill up with this appreciation of whatever it might be, but it's something good, a good quality in the world. And then it starts to fill up this feeling of this attitude of gratitude within ourselves. And then the other friend to gratitude is so that gratitude doesn't stay silent and it's just something that we have internal. It's this overflowing that happens again, and it overflows into thankfulness. And thankfulness is an expression of that gratitude that we have. As I was saying, with doing those little funny games or whatever it is, but also with a lot of other simple things that we can do. And just carrying this energy that we appreciate in ourselves or in the world outside to other people. So it might be a thank you note, it might be a little gift, it might be an acknowledgement that we do to someone. Something very, very easy. It doesn't have to be something great. So gratitude also doesn't mean that we have to add something. Gratitude is this notion of seeing what is already there and then starting to grow that and starting to encourage that. So people might say, you know, if people would just act this way, there's never change going to be happening because we have to be angry sometimes and we have to make things happen. But if we do the whole process, if we go into the mode of appreciation and of overflowing, then the good qualities that we're looking at, the good qualities that we see, are actually starting to grow out into the world. And they're starting to grow in a different kind of way than when we're trying to make them or force them to happen. And I've noticed that very often gratitude is something that we don't really practice. It's something that arises. Like for myself, I was sick recently. I had a bit of cough and stuff, and it felt really bad. Luckily, it was just for one day. But then once I recovered, I was really, really grateful because I was like, "Hey, this feels good. That's great." And, you know, I was like, "Wow, I can move around again, and my voice is back, and I can enjoy the food or whatever it is." And then I was grateful, but then it kind of wears out. So I wanted to give you a few kind of ideas how we could practice gratitude so it becomes a habit that is there for us, not just if something which was bad just becomes good, but also that we have it when we are sick. So it happened to me actually as well. While I was sick, I was kind of reflecting on how many people are in hospital, how many people are feeling like myself now or even worse, and that I can be grateful that I have medicines, that I have a community that looks after me. We had, for example, one layperson that knew I was sick and she made some concoction for me to drink, like some lemon and ginger and honey or whatever it was. And it doesn't mean that we are not acting or that we are not seeing the problem, but we are appreciating what is already there, and we are also appreciating the options that we have. So it doesn't mean I have to be grateful and I have to grit my teeth and not go to the doctor if I need to go to the doctor. You know, gratefulness also means realizing we have doctors, we have a health system, we have Medicare cards, we have for ourselves, we have low income healthcare cards even that we can use. So if there is anything we can use, we should use that. Sometimes gratitude is also triggered through tragedy, and that's something we might be able to see over in the east at the moment with all those fires or with earthquakes like in New Zealand. And they're all very sad occasions. Or even when someone dies, when we experience a loss, it can be a trigger of gratitude. And I was trying to kind of reflect why that is so. What actually happens? Someone was describing when the planes hit in New York, the trade centers, and how suddenly the world changed and there was dust everywhere, but people started to care about each other. And the whole atmosphere changed. And why did it change? Because we are living in those bubbles. We're living in a bubble of self-centeredness, of trying to get this or get that, and we don't reflect about how we are connected to each other or what people might need. And if a tragedy happens, it pops that bubble. So if I can encourage people to, when it's safe, when there is no tragedy, to try and pop that bubble every now and then, and to practice that kind of gratitude, to practice that interconnectedness. And once you start going with gratitude, you realize there is actually a huge universe. We came driving in a car. The car has an air conditioning. The air conditioning is nice when it's hot outside. Someone produced this air conditioning. Someone made the car. Someone made the road. It's just never ending. If you think about the food that comes here on your table, even if you're not a monastic who gets that food given and offered freely, even if you've paid for your food, there is so many things that go into it. The people who plant it, the people who ship it, the people who sell it. There's just this huge universe. And if we start to kind of open our eyes for that universe, then we start to be like little children again. We have this wonder, we have this appreciation, we have this joy of all these things, you know, all these Christmas lights or whatever it is, the bouncy switch balls, they're called, I was told in the back there, those gym balls. I have one in the office for my back. Yes, but when we start to realize what all goes into this, and if we make it a practice, it becomes easier and easier. And gratitude is actually something which becomes an antidote to so many things that we're trying to fight against. And if we practice gratitude, we kind of protect ourselves. Then it's like a medicine. So we protect ourselves against dissatisfaction, even against addiction, burnouts, fear, depression, and isolation. And on the other hand, we're boosting our happiness, our resilience, and we get better sleep out of it, for example, as well. So gratitude is actually something that is very, very simple. The hard thing is to keep doing it and to find ways to get into a habit. So I have a few suggestions how that could be done. And oops, an example as well. I had that as a topic with the teens group in Victoria when I was teaching them about, what was that, almost a year ago on Australia Day 2019. So maybe let's start with this example that I did with them. It's called the Appreciation, Gratitude and Thankfulness ABC. And the task is you get a sheet of paper. I've brought a few if people want to take it away afterwards, and you have the whole alphabet on it, and you take a bit of time and try to think about as many things as you can for all those letters. Mm-hmm. And then you have a little kind of resource that you can come back to. And the kind of task I gave them for that was to think of things, people, situations, states that you appreciate and that you're grateful for. So that could be a physical thing, it could be a relationship, or it could be a state. So the examples I had here is like sunshine, chocolate, or a bike is like a physical thing. A relationship is to a person, like your family, but even to your like doctors or teachers or whatever it is. And a state like the peacefulness, the health, the forgiveness, whatever it might be. So I'll just choose one random letter here to give you an idea. And on that paper, there we go. We got the I. So it is the team speaking here. So he will hear that maybe. Number one is ice cream. Very simple. Internet. Infrastructure. Integrity. Independence, and what is that? ICC. Does anyone know what that is? We had a few short forms here that I didn't know what it was. Cricket. Oh, cricket. Yes, that's right. That's what it was. Yeah. Okay. Something like that. Yes. Or another one. P. Public transport. Pizza. parents. PlayStation 4. Police. planes, plumbers, pianos, plants, phones, peas, prosthetic limbs, and plastic surgery. Anyway, so whoever is interested, I've copied 10 of them. What is important in this exercise is not just that we are listing things, but that we are describing the thing or trying to think of it as vividly and as clearly as we can in our minds. And then we are trying to connect it with a feeling. So we don't just say, I'm grateful. I mean, these are just kind of ideas, but we are trying to expand those ideas. We don't just say, I'm grateful for my home. We will kind of try to think, I'm grateful for my home, which has a balcony that's where I can see the sea, for example, because then it's something which becomes much, much more kind of palpable. Or if you think of your family members, you don't just think of, I'm glad I have a brother, or I have a mother, or I have a father. Try to connect it with something that kind of gives you some kind of inkling, some kind of kindling in your heart. So I'm grateful for my parents, for example, because they have put aside money over many, many years for myself before I came 18. So I was able to go and study. So I was able to go and travel. So I was able to, you know, go out in the world and experience different things. And get to know different monasteries as well, for example. And then the other thing that I encourage them to do is to choose a person and then to write to that person. So these days, of course, it's not just notes. I did give them like a bit of paper so they could write down something and write a letter to a person, but these days so many things happen through emails, texts, WhatsApp, whatever it is these days. And if we just take a little bit of time to do that, and there is challenges out there to do these things for 30 days, and I've actually took up that challenge for myself and tried it, and it was something which was actually really inspiring, because there is always some person every day that has done something for you that you can be grateful for. And instead of just keeping that gratefulness, as I said before, inside, actually sharing it with that person, it makes you feel much better than just having it inside. And I'm sure that the people who got that little note were happy to receive it as well. Okay, so what are other things? Or when can you do these kind of practices? It's good if you try to develop a habit to do that at the same time, or to have something which triggers that habit. So if you are, for example, reflecting every time when you go to bed, that's a good time to reflect on those things. Or every time you wake up. One of the kind of practices that I have picked up for myself is to reflect whenever I'm traveling. For myself, it's actually a longer kind of travel. When I go back home, or when I go to Victoria, whatever, I just kind of look back on the time that I've spent and try to see all the good things and be grateful for those good things that have happened in that time. But for you guys, I guess there is a lot of kind of commuting happening as well. So reflecting on those things while you're commuting, and even, who knows, maybe sending a text or a short message to a person that you feel grateful towards might be a really nice thing to do. Yes, another thing that they suggest is the so-called gratitude countdown. It's something you can also do with another person. So you kind of count down from 10 to 0, and you go back and forth, and you see if you can find a few things that you're grateful for. As I said before, it can be very, very, very simple. Let's see if we can maybe get a few things going. I'm grateful that I could go to a restaurant dinner today, even though it was actually quite far away. We went all the way to Netherlands, but those people in that restaurant, they prepared such nice food for us and gave that food to us and sustained our stomachs for that day. Sorry, that was actually quite a long one, but tried to kind of, yeah. But that people feed the monks. anyone has one to share, even if it's just an easy one. What are you grateful for?
I'm grateful for my friend.
Yep. How does your friend make you feel?
Love.
Great. Nice. Yep.
I'm grateful one yard is not further away.
Because? Or what does it entail?
Well, it's a long drive.
Yes, yes, but you're glad it's closer?
Yes.
Because you like going there? Or
yes.
Yeah, or you like the people coming here? Yes. Great. Yep.
I am grateful that we get the monks to come and teach us every
yes.
week.
Yes. And we are grateful that we get the practice that we can share with the people that come to the group here, and that we can, as I was saying before, pay it forward. Even though it might go wrong sometimes, or we might say the wrong thing or whatever it is, you know, that just happens. Yes, please.
I'm grateful that my son
yes.
is here. I'm not going to a meditation
now. Oh, great.
And I'm more with time to take this.
Yep.
Talking about thankfulness, because I'm a test student.
Yes.
We're always talking about being thankful for our blessings.
Yes.
So you were quite specific about certain things.
Yes.
I'm thankful for that.
Wonderful. Good on you for the son who was driving there. Wonderful. Okay, I don't know if we got 10, but you get the idea there. Okay, just for maybe also for the tape, I have collected a few kind of resources for people if they like to get back to this in the future. So there is a YouTube channel which is called Kurzgesagt, in a nutshell. Kurzgesagt is the German word for in a nutshell. And they just released a video which is called An Antidote to Dissatisfaction, and that actually talks about gratitude. Then there is a really nice video that was made by brothers David Steindl Rast. He's a Christian monk in Austria, I believe. And the video is called A Grateful Day with Brother David Steindl Rast. Then there is another thing which is called the Virtue Project. And they have made it their kind of mission to collect as many virtues as they could from all the different religions in the world where people agree what a virtue is, and to collect 100 cards. And I actually have the app on my device, and you can kind of shake your device and it picks a random card, and it describes the virtue, it tells you how to practice it, and it gives you kind of like an affirmation. So that's something really nice. And what I often do is I take one of those cards and I send it to a person to acknowledge that quality in them. And the company in Victoria, which is called Share Tree, they have picked up the cards from the Virtue Project and added another 20 cards. They call them the character cards. And the app is actually made that way, that you can build a community and you can encourage each other and acknowledge each other for the good things that you've done. So whatever I've mentioned, I'm sure people can just Google these things and they should be able to find it. But I'll try to give the information to Bob, and maybe it can even go into the description of the talk if it's uploaded, so that people can kind of access that. Yes. Okay. So that's a lot of information. I don't know, was there any questions? It's already getting a bit late. But what we often do is, if people don't want to ask in the group, I'll stick around. So if there is any questions, please come and ask. If there is any feedback, we're also very happy to receive feedback.